Can you hear now?
Yes, thank you. It's all done with transmission. The words are not that important anyway. So, yes.
There's a question I have, and I don't know if it's worth asking, but it's puzzling to me. It's like a koan. As you tell this story of these, as what it sounds like, the unfolding of reality, consciousness, or whatever, I keep thinking at the same time that if everything is...
Hang on. Your question's longer than I can remember.
I'm sorry.
Would you mind taking a mic? Usually I can remember the whole thing, but it depends on the state I'm in.
Well, actually, I'm just wordy. It's a simple question. Let me say it in a few words. Are we really talking about a kind of an unfolding in time, even of that which came before time? Or are we talking about something that's happening at every moment, all of these levels?
Everybody hear the question? This is a question one should not give a finite answer to, but I will. The first three that I spoke about occur outside of time, which means they are still occurring because they never began and they never end. Everything else occurs in time from the dawn of time.
Which keeps happening.
Which keeps happening over and over and over again. What this leads us to, which is where we'll get to hopefully tomorrow, otherwise everybody will have to stay Sunday afternoon. Really what this leads us to is the way that the mind interprets for the soul. Because what the mind-soul combination does is it naturally experiences that which is the densest. We have to reverse that process so that it can experience the finer levels simultaneously. This is what mysticism is. If there is no interference, the mind-soul, which I guess we could call the spirit or the intelligence, I don't mean the IQ intelligence, the innate soul intelligence will always go to that which is the densest, because that which is the densest, unfortunately, is the most magnetic. It is the magnetism of your body that holds your soul here. You know all those Sufi poems about the bird fleeing the cage and all of that? We would be gone in a moment. We would absolutely be gone because it's painful here. If it wasn't for this incredible magnetism that is built in to each atom of our body, and that's how illumination occurs. The atoms are, I'll use an odd word, coaxed into releasing their natural luminosity, which is their magnetism, which holds the soul. Now, the soul's not in the body, just so we're clear on that. The body is the vehicle of the intelligence of the soul. But there certainly is something in the body, because when that something leaves, you're dead. Now, Sufis very wisely call it the breath, knowing that they're not talking at all about the air. They're talking about the breath, the current. And that current is held. And that current is what keeps the body in movement. And that current, when we go into stillness, it is that current which then begins to move. And that's when contemplation changes to meditation. Up until then, it's just concentration, not just, it is concentration and contemplation. When the current begins to move, that's contemplation. And just so we're clear, I'm not talking about kundalinis rising or anything else, there is this universal current, electricity, that exists in each atom of our being, in our beings. And when we can cajole the our atomic structure, it releases this, and each of our atoms become transformed by light, by this release. And then we are more luminous. Now, fortunately for many of us, as Llewellyn said, it's not just a momentary experience. It happens in a harmonious way. Otherwise, we'd all flip out. It's very difficult living in the world to accept these experiences. We think, wouldn't that be great? Yes and no. But now we are developing ways, maybe for our generation, but certainly for the ones to come. We're developing the path of today and the path of tomorrow, so that when the awakening experiences occur, we'll have the training built into grade school. We'll start teaching kids when they're 2 years old what to do with enlightenment. You know, we don't do that now, but we will. As the consciousness of the human organism evolves, which it is, there are some changes. Now you want the bad news? Evolution is not a line, it's a circle. So let's say that this is evolution rising. As evolution is rising here, unfortunately, simultaneously, it's falling here. And all you have to do is look around, and you'll know that's true. What the Sufis have mastered, this is completely off the topic, but you might find it interesting. What the Sufis and others have mastered is the ability to ride the wheel to this point where it's almost at the top, and then hop off to a bigger wheel. This is they know when it's going up. This is really, do you know what Hal and Makam are? Makamat and Hal? Hal are the stages of ecstasy, the levels of ecstasy. Makam means a station, a platform that is built under your ecstasy so that you don't fall back down. So you have this great experience. If you don't build the makam underneath it, you end up having worse than nothing. That's why the path is a partnership between discipline and ecstasy. The discipline builds the platform. The ecstasy raises us to the next level. We keep building greater and greater platforms. Going up and going deeper, I would agree with, yes. Going up and going deeper, very definitely. And what the real job of the teacher is to say, you know, you've built your platform of compassion. You don't have to keep learning the same lesson. Now you're on this lesson. Build your platform up here. Stop building that one. It's as solid as a rock. But we feel comfortable finally in a world that we've been so uncomfortable in, when we have this one anchor and we have to let go. My teacher, Pir Vilayat, always uses this example, always. When he was, I think, 19, he was learning alpine climbing, cliff climbing in the Alps. And it was before, how old is Pir Vilayat, 87? Yeah. So it was before they had all the sophisticated equipment. He had a rope, and he had a teacher. And he always says, I was on this cliffside a few hundred feet in the air in the Alps, and I reached out and finally found a place to put these two fingers and a place for the big toe of my left foot. And he said, just as I was about to relax, my teacher said, now let go with your left foot. And he said, I was paralyzed. I knew I couldn't do it, but if I didn't do it, I'd still be on the cliff. So I had to let go and have enough faith in the teacher when he said, there'll be another toe hold 12 inches higher. Just raise your foot up there. And he did, and of course he learned climbing and he learned about life. So what the teacher does is says, it's enough with compassion. Now, they might say it overtly, they might say it in a dream, or they might say it intuitionally. It's enough with compassion. Get on to the next. And we're saying, oh, but compassion was so hard. Have I really learned it? No, I better perfect it. The teacher doesn't want you to perfect the makam. Just build it solidly enough that it will endure. And then go on to the next. Otherwise, you get attached to your stations. So. The breath is everything from the dawning of those few rays that live in the world of glorification to now. Everything is the breath. So the breath is the rising and the breath is the falling. When we come into manifestation and we go through many worlds to get here, which we'll cover, I hope, the vehicle we take is the breath. When we leave, the vehicle we take is the breath. Every world has its own breath. The breath of the physical world is the physical breath. When we go into the jinn world, the world of forms, the mind world rather, next, you will experience the breath of mind. There is no physical body, there is no physical breath, but there is the mental breath. Now, mind in the broadest sense of the word. And there are angelic breaths. And then, lest we forget, there are the elements, and each of the elements which comes with us to every plane has a breath too. So breath is life itself on every plane. And when the prophet ascended to heaven on that holy night, you know, he made the journey from Jerusalem, from the Dome of the Rock, he ascended on Burak. Burak looked like what? It had the face of a human being, the body of a horse. What does that mean? Burak is the breath. And it means that the ascension is represented by the human face. The human being goes through all the planes. The energy is represented by the horse. The energy of the ascent. The consciousness is the face of the human. The energy is represented by the horse. So breath will be with you until the end. Now, most people on planet Earth have no idea what breath is. Really, they just have no idea. I think we really have to thank our sister and brother yogis, because they kept alive the science of breath. Even the Sufis lost some of it. But the yogis, in hidden away, kept it alive and then transmitted again where it needed to go. So the science of breath is still very much alive on this planet. And there are teachers who teach nothing but the breath. And what an incredible thing to teach. Now, you said, is the breath connected to the soul? The breath is the soul. Right. The soul is not in the body. The soul is God, but it's God moving. So the soul, we have this idea that the soul is something like an electric wire we plug ourselves in and it keeps us running like the, you know, the whatever that thing is. But the soul is God. So that's why there isn't an old soul and there isn't a young soul. I don't want to burst anybody's bubble. But all souls are the same. There isn't a good soul and a bad soul. They cover themselves with different things. And just as all of us are wearing different clothing, the covering really matters. But the soul itself, all souls are the same. All souls come from the same place. All souls go to the same place. The only difference in souls, and it's not a difference in soul, is that each soul is given... Now, this is completely untrue, so please don't listen. Each soul is given a kind of a charge, a battery, that it can go so far and no farther. So some souls will stay in the angelic world, some souls will go to the thousands of worlds of mind, worlds of form, and then ultimately some few souls will make it all the way to physical manifestation. This is the end of the line. And there's a point in everybody's life, there's a moment, which is really the end of the line, and the return journey begins. So if I have your permission, and I mean this, I'm going to just leave the angelic worlds. Because if I don't do that, we won't get to the next two. And so much of our work is in dealing with the next two, that it is important that we move on.
One quick question.
Yeah, I was going to say, if anybody has one, I'll take it.
Is Makam the stage?
I'll repeat it.
Is that related to practices?
Is Makam the stage, the station, related to practices? I would hope so. In other words, I'm sure that the spiritual teacher is...
Or is that what a stage is, a practice?
No. A practice is the spice of God. You know, we're the stew, and God's the cook, and a practice is the spice. Oh, I think I'll adjust this a little bit. A little more time. or... Whatever. A practice is also the soul of the teacher and the soul of the student communicating. The teacher doesn't get the practice from outside the student. The teacher gets the practice from the student. Always. So people often ask me, because sometimes I just don't have enough time to give people individual interviews, so I'll sit with 10 Marids and we'll do it all together, which actually is much more valuable anyway. And they'll say, but it seems like those two had the same situation. You gave one practice and one the other. And the answer, of course, is that's right. That's right, because it is in the soul communication between these two symbolic beings of God. The student is a symbol of God. The teacher is a symbol of God. That's all we are. And it is in the communication of God with God that God produces the perfect wisdom. And one last bit that I have to add on for you. I've been doing the same practice for 35 years. Now I do many other practices, but my essential practice has been the same practice for 35 years. I'm beginning to get to know it. So the soul covers itself with this very fine vibration of the angelic realms. The four elements are present. There is a sense of individuation. There is movement. There is communication. I was joking before about the harp and the wings, but they're actually quite symbolic. The harp symbolizes harmony. There's perfect harmony in the angelic world, and it symbolizes beauty, beautiful music. There is beauty in the angelic world. The other thing, these are the things that I'm getting now, I have to tell you before we leave. The other thing is you need to remember for the future that there are, at this point, two kinds of angels. There are Jalal and Jamal, angels of power and angels of beauty. There is no such thing as one is better than the other. We're not at masculine and feminine yet. We're at vibrations. There is the vibration of beauty and the vibration of power. All are necessary for the unfoldment of the One, which is what this is all about. As long as your conscious mind always remembers that there is one being, the eternal, the only being, nothing and no one exists save the One, all of this will make sense. If you forget that, when we get to the pain and suffering part, it won't make sense. So you have to write that on your hand or something. Actually, you don't even have to if you... There's a way you can hold your hand so that it says Allah. There's actually different ways you can hold your hand. If you can see in Arabic, it'll say Allah right in your hand. Anyway. Some souls have this additional charge of energy. And they leave the angelic world. And they go to the world of form. Now, there really aren't many problems in the angelic world. There isn't much resistance. There is harmony. So this morning when Llewellyn was speaking about certain worlds of light, they are angelic realms. And there are realms, angelic realms of purity. The Sufis call them the worlds of ice and snow. And if you can imagine ice and snow with sky the same color as ice and snow. And you know, mountain climbers get lost when they look at the ice against a background of a certain color of sky. They lose their bearing, they get vertigo, and so on. Well, what does pure mean? Pure means only that substance exists. We talk about pure food. Pure food is unadulterated food. Well, if your pure being exists, you do not have any reason to be inharmonious, experience vertigo, so to speak. Those are those worlds that are purely white. There is no color. And it does something to the human consciousness to even imagine worlds of purity, worlds of light. You don't have to always see everything. Just imagining it is enough. But somehow, some of these beings leave the angelic world, go into a world of more time, more relativity, and cover themselves with a denser layer after going through an odd experience. What's the odd experience? Well, the angelic world is very perfect. Why would anybody want to leave the angelic world? And yet there is something in some souls that pulls them forward. This is important. I know I'm throwing a lot at you, and I apologize, but it's important to know this. One of the main forces for the spiritual person is the pull of the future, not the push of the past. Most people who live a reactive life, a conditioned life, will live their life based upon the push of the past, the habits of the past. Well, this happened to me before when I did this, so I can't do this again because this is what happened before when I did it. I better do something else. The spiritual person isn't bound by that conditioning. They are attuning to the pull of the future. So they are moving towards birth rather than towards death. Because what happened to that angelic being is it died in the angelic world. It didn't die the way we think of death. It transformed. It went from lighter density to heavier density. It died. Now, the next amazing thing happened. It was born. It wasn't born here yet. But it was born into a world of form. A very, very beautiful world, but a world of form. This is the world where flowers are designed, where the archetypes found in nature exist. This is the world of perfect poetry and perfect music and, it's perfection. but it's form. And it's shocking, leaving the angelic and coming into form. It's shocking. It's shocking to come into a world where you can look and see. It's just shocking. And the memory of that initial death stays with us until we release that memory. So we're not just overcoming the fact that we had a rough childhood. We have to overcome memories that are so profound and so cosmic, and yet we have to overcome them. This is how the one evolves. Remember, individually, just a grain of sand. And yet individually, we can become the one. But individually, just a grain of sand. No better training for the ego than to always remember that. Oh, I'm just a grain of sand. Who cares? But by training oneself to feel the pull, now some people call it destiny, but that is not quite right. It is the pull. It is the pull of perfection. And it's pulling us. It's the siren song that leads us to life, not to smashing on the rocks. And we feel that pull and have enough faith. Now you can imagine the faith of an angel to let that go, that angelic world, and come into this one. Not this world physical, but this world of form. And so that is the first death and the first birth. Or some people say it's the second birth, the first being the birth, the consciousness of an angel. In any event, it is a big transformation, huge transformation. What's transformed? Energy. The angelic world is a rate of vibration that is really imperceptible to us. For people who really see angels and not just tell stories from their imagination, that angel has to create a form that is slow enough to be experienced. I don't mean by the physical eyes, that's definitely imagination, but by the inner eyes. Anyway, so now we're born in a world of form, a world of mind, and oddly enough, a world of feeling. Because in the angelic world, there's very little feeling. Everything's pure. You need impurity to have feeling. You know, what are angelic emotions? better not to make movies about them, you know, the real ones, because they won't sell. There are no emotions as we think of them. And the Sufis and others have written about cosmic emotions, angelic emotions. And they're vast, and they're not relative. So it's not, I felt sad today and happy tomorrow. The underlying teaching, interestingly enough, of Sufism is the primal nature of the soul is happiness, but there is no duality. So there's no happiness and sadness, no pleasure or pain, primarily happiness. We don't understand that word when it's said without duality, when it's said without comparison. We do not know what happiness is. And we say things like bliss and ecstasy and it's happiness, pure happiness. Now, I'll tell you a story. I decided in the middle of the last hour I wasn't going to tell stories because we don't have enough time. Then you reminded me we have all the time in all the universes, not only in this one. This is a very easy story, but very to the point. It was a great saint who lived in this world and helped many people. And he died, and he went to the gates of heaven, and there was Saint Peter. And the saint was very humble, and he wasn't even thinking of his good deeds or anything. He was just hoping he would get in heaven. And he went to St. Peter, and St. Peter said, "Aren't you the great saint who did all those good things? The saint said, I guess so. And Saint Peter said, are you happy? And he said, no. Saint Peter said, go back down. Be happy. Learn happiness. And Hazrat Inayat Khan, who is for many of us really the driving force, he left this incredible teaching, said this thing that the first time I read it, I had to reread it. He said, I would much rather a person be good, be happy than be good. If they're good and not happy, it's better that they be happy than good. And they should learn happiness and give up being good. Because their goodness is not for the good of anybody if they're not happy. This is a tough teaching, especially in the West. People don't like this teaching. So they create intellectual blocks. Well, he really means, I mean what you think I mean. What you're afraid I mean is what I mean. So now we're in the jinn world. This is the world of creativity. This is the world where archetypical forms exist. This is the world where interaction becomes more discernible. The jinn world, jinn is the root of the word genius. And genies are jinns. The jinn world is, I'm going to make up a figure, but I'm going to say it's 1,000 layers of world. And 1,000 layers. And it goes from the purest, highest forms to the darkest. Astral forms. And I don't know if you know or don't know, and I thought Llewellyn did a very beautiful job this morning answering this question, but Sufis aren't particularly fascinated by the darkness. You know, they always say this same thing, I neither desire heaven nor fear hell. I just want to sit in the arms of my beloved. You can have the rest. They have no fear of hell because all they see in hell is love's raging fire. So for them, it's fine. And no desire of heaven because then heaven becomes material and it's not that at all. But there are places with lesser light. That's true. And they are created by the limitations in our beings. The natural human being is filled with light, filled with optimism. That's why if you give up hope, you've given up everything, because you've given up the natural human condition. So we go through difficult times and we get trained to, as Mevlana says, come, come, whether you've broken your vow 100 times before, come and come again. And then he gives the great line, which nobody quotes, but the best line of the whole quatrain. He says, ours is not a caravan of despair. Ours is not a caravan of despair. Ours is not a caravan of pain and suffering. Don't despair. So you've broken your vow. You have tomorrow. And tomorrow's magic breath. And so it goes. So, you know, students would come to a teacher and say, look, this one student is terrible there, this and that. And the real teacher will say, well, that's what they've done up until today, but we don't know what they'll be tomorrow. And it's not that they're speaking about the student who's out there. They're telling the student who's present, never deviate from the future. Never just stay in the past. It's a very unbalanced state. And we find as people get older and they begin to reminisce and tell story after story, that the future closes. You know, we make jokes about old codgers telling their tales, but really the energy closes. My teachers were in their 70s and 80s. I didn't hear them telling stories. You know, they were always... I just spoke to Pirvalayat. He's 87. I don't think he has a body left. His knees don't work. And nothing works. As he said, the machine. Oh. And so what's the first thing he said? He said, oh, I'm inspired. I've got this new book in the works. I won't finish it till I'm 90, but I know that it's going to happen. And on he goes. And he said, so what? So the machine isn't working. I'll find a way to keep going. He said, my enthusiasm will keep me going. So now we're in the jinn world. And again, people have different charges, different energies. Some will go a little bit. They'll stay in the archetypical plane. Some will go further and further and further. Some will make it all the way to physical manifestation. The question arises, again, from your question. Do you have to visit every one of these planes? And the answer, of course, is no. You can, when you're on Earth, do you have to visit every square inch of the planet? No. You go where you're drawn to go. But remember that this is still the soul. It doesn't know good and bad. It doesn't know right and wrong. It doesn't know much. When it comes into the jinn world, the only information it has is the information it might have gleaned from an angel who's coming back from Earth. And maybe that angel was giving back in that world that which is of the angelic world, and maybe that incoming angel got a little piece of wisdom. But it's the wisdom of an angel. It's not the wisdom of someone who really is a particularly good guide about the earth. In the jinn world, in all of those planes that one is born into and dies, you cannot take from that plane anything that is either heavier or the same weight as that plane as you ascend. So if you're born into a plane of darkness, let's say you were some miserable murderer or something, then you have to unload all of the substance of that heavy plane before you can go on. And so, in a sense, that's hell. And where is it? In the mind. The only place that hell is in the mind. I'll tell you a story, because this one is really good. And I would hear the ire of Murshid Sam if I didn't tell you this story. This was his story. I like this story a lot. A German general from World War II dies. He goes through death. He opens his eyes, looks down. It's still him. He's still in his uniform. He's in this nice little German village. Everything's very neat, cute. And sitting in the middle of the town square is Adolf Hitler. And he's crying and weeping and sad and moaning. And the general goes up to him and says, you're here? He said, yes, I'm here. He said, well, why are you so sad? This place looks very nice. Hitler said, what does that sign say in the tailor shop? Schwartz the tailor. What's the bakery? Coen Brothers Bakery. Hitler looks at him and he says, this is the heaven of the Jews and it's hell for me. It is what we make it. It is what we make it. What goes on after we die is the world that you all are very familiar with. It's the dream world. But you have the knowledge that you are not going to wake up in the body anymore. And your ability to both live in that world and create with it becomes your life after this one. Knowing that in your life here on earth, you've collected a bunch of impressions and memories that are not finished. You will carry everything that's not finished with you in your mind, and you will create a world of those unfinished impressions. If they're hellish, your world will be hell. If they're heavenly, your world will be heaven. But you must give back to each place that which you took from it. What did we take from this world here? We took this piece of meat. And what's it made up of? Four things: earth, water, fire, air. When we leave here, we give back to this planet what we took from it in order of their speed. What's the fastest element? The air. Right away, you have one breath and the air is gone. What's next? Fire. In an hour, the body is cold. Next, water. Slowly, the body dehydrates. And the last, the slowest, the earth, dust to dust. We cannot take this with us. You can freeze it. You can do anything you want. You cannot take this with you. But you take the memories, the unfinished memories. Now, if you had to live in a world where you had to finish out every single memory that was unfinished from this place, it would be a long visit in the next places. So what happens? Souls are coming in. Remember, they're completely innocent. The only thing they've learned is from souls going out. They're coming in and you have this, I have this heavy weight that I have to carry. Oh, I'll take that weight for you. Well, it's the inclination to be an alcoholic. Fine, I'll take that weight. Gee, I wonder what an alcoholic is, because that's what happens. The soul knows no discrimination. It just takes. Now, is there no harmony? There is something called the law of attraction and repulsion. And Llewellyn spoke about similitudes this morning. This is a law that does not make sense on this planet. Because on this planet, we would say, why would anybody take something that is damaging, that is painful? And the answer is because there's one being. If there were two beings, then you could have a choice. But we're all part of one being. And this one being wishes to know itself. I was a hidden treasure and I desired to be known. I want to know every aspect, every facet of this jewel. I want to know pain and I want to know pleasure. If there's pain, who feels pain? I do. Not you human beings. You feel the shadow of pain. You don't feel real pain. I feel the pain of the whole existence. I being God, not me. So that's why a soul will take on a burden that is unbelievable. You can't imagine the burdens these souls take. Why would a soul take on a burden of being born with a handicap? Why would they be born with a body that doesn't work? Why would they be born with abusive parents? Why would they do any of that? I was a hidden treasure, and I desired to be known. Now, what's evolution? Evolution is the movement towards resting in harmonious experiences and memories. Impressions is really what they are. As we move to put these unfinished impressions, which are inharmonious, to rest, the consciousness of the planet changes. How does it change? The souls coming in now don't have so much garbage to deal with. Because the souls coming in will take anything. Who else takes them? What's a bodhisattva? A bodhisattva is a soul that says, I will not go on until all who come after me have gone through their pain and suffering, and I will help them. I will go through it with them. What a vow. What an unbelievable vow, this bodhisattvic vow. You know, where did Jesus go? He didn't go to the holy people. He didn't go to the pious people. He went to the prostitutes and the tax collectors. The tax collectors were the most hated people, and the prostitutes were the least respected. And that's where he went. Why? He was the great healer. He was the bodhisattva. Where else could he go? He went where it was natural for him to go. So we're not kind to people because we want to be nice. You know, the whole concept of good and bad is just a concept. We're kind to people because it is our nature, all of us, or we'd be out playing golf now in the rain instead of sitting here. It is our nature to have this compassionate tendency. Psychologically, it can confuse us and often does. Nevertheless, it is our nature. We have to learn how to deal with that nature, but it is our nature. We have the seeds of the bodhisattva in us. So the bodhisattvas and the incoming souls relieve the pain of that world. Now, are there souls here on earth who do it also? And the answer is yes. There are masters, hidden masters, who help the souls crossing over, and who also go into that realm and help, because without help it would just be impossible. Just imagine your worst nightmares compounded by everybody else's worst nightmares layering on top and interweaving with it. The confusion, the pain that's there. It's just unimaginable, frankly. So, that's part, those impressions that we take on from some of the worlds are part of the makeup of who we are. Now, you don't have to be a murderer because you've taken the impressions of a murderer. You can take those impressions, which are so dense, and come in, and you'll have this tendency, and when you overcome it, this huge amount of energy is released. Huge. It's like grace is pouring in, because you've not only released it here, you've released it everywhere. It's finished. That memory, that impression of hate might have incarnated 1,000 times. And you're finally putting it to rest. You, human, divine mind, God mind, finally it's finished. In all of the universes, it's finished. Think of what an honor it is to be a human being. What faith God has in us. This is not about our faith in God, it's God's faith in us that manifests. Because if you look around, it is a dark time. But God has faith that we'll see the light in this time of darkness. There's an interesting teaching in Christianity, in Buddhism, and in Judaism. And probably in Islam, but I haven't found the exact section, or I'm not interpreting it right. And the teaching is that the world must go through darkness to develop the magnetism to draw in greater light. That the darkness becomes the akasha, the accommodation I spoke of before, to draw in greater and greater experiences of light. Well, the last 150 years, especially the last 100, have been pretty dark. Right now, it's pretty dark. But it's at the end. You can sense that the light is coming. You can taste it. And if we can be part of that, why would we choose anything else? It doesn't make sense. It's neither logical nor economical. So I'd like to end with a prayer. Is it end time? Yeah. Tomorrow, somebody asked me if we will have the same thing again or go on. We'll go on. And for the people who weren't here who might show up tomorrow, they'll adjust. You know, it'll work. But I'm not going to repeat again. We need to get through who we are. Because we're not just these impressions, even though that would be bad enough. But we need to go find out who we are, where we, what makes us, what we're really carrying. Sufis give practices, they don't teach techniques. It's a very important point. It was made this morning, I want to reiterate it. This is not do this and this happens. Practices are alive, they're beings, they're reflections, they're parts of God, they're all of God. And we bring to it ourself, which is parts of God, all of God. Something happens. So I'm not going to offer tomorrow a lot of techniques on how to remove impressions. Each of us have to find a cook who knows just how to cook us in the right way. I'll give you a hint. We don't all hold impressions the same way. We hold them in many different ways. You need to find the right way to have that impression come to rest in the right way, or it'll just keep continuing in another form. Any questions that I can answer in under 30 seconds? Okay, let's say a prayer. O thou who art the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the Lord of heaven and earth, open our hearts that we may hear thy voice, which constantly cometh from within. Disclose to us thy divine light, which is hidden in our souls, that we may know and understand life better. Most merciful and compassionate God, give us thy great goodness, teach us thy loving forgiveness. Raise us above the distinctions and differences which divide us. Send us the peace of thy divine spirit and unite us all in thy perfect being. Amen. So thank you and bless you. And have happiness tonight.